speakerphone, but there's another word. Oh, well, by a conference.
Yeah. And Patty?
It's your problem.
Let's try the system, Morgan.
Okay.
So, we have all council and staff present. All staff that need to be here. Ken, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Sure. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Item number four, added agenda items. Rick, do you have anything?
No, I have anything else just come under my reports and stuff.
Okay. I have nothing.
Nothing.
All right.
There was one I was going to add, but I have to go get it, is that we have an agreement on the cemetery, and I could go get it if you guys wanted to do it. We run the cemetery, and it was an annual deal that's expired, and I think I have it. If you don't care if we had it, it's kind of a housekeeping thing just to get done.
Is that the one out in Lake Butte?
Yes.
Okay.
So, why don't you add it, and then if I put it at the end of the agenda, if I get a chance to get in there and get it, we'll do it, just to get it out of the way.
Other matters.
No one out there minds it much.
No one's going to mind.
Well, other matters is number 12, so 12A, cemetery agreement renewal. Okay, yeah, we'll get it done. Okay, move on to consent agenda. Any comments, questions, corrections, or can we move approve the consent agenda as presented?
No problem.
I'm fine?
Fine.
Adele? You still there, Adele? We lost her.
Adele?
Patty, do you know what might have happened?
No, there's a green light on, so it looks like it's still...
But it could be just on from this hand.
I heard some noise, well, it's so dangerous.
Well, turn it off and let it on.
I don't know.
Yeah, just
Adele, are you there?
I think it's a button on the far left.
There you go.
Okay, it seems to
be that turn.
Okay. So, 1804, we lost the Adele connection.
I think Rick picked it up. Did you know there?
No, because he didn't go in for anything like that.
He's talking
Maybe talking to himself.
Yeah, we've got, now that we've got those lines that roll over.
How are you ladies tonight?
We're good.
Good to see you.
This is a real high-tech place, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we're with it.
Well, she should try. She must know she lost us, and she'll dial in again. Okay, now that's the sound when it's ringing.
Yeah, go ahead. And
which one? This one?
Yeah.
Adele?
Are you back?
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened?
I'm back.
What? What happened?
I'm sorry.
Okay, that was my fault. Well, you're back.
So
she's cutting out. It's cutting out a little bit.
Can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you, yeah. Okay, so I think we lost you at item number four when we added cemetery agreement renewal under added agenda items. Did you get that?
Okay. Yes, I have that.
Okay, and then we just moved on to consent agenda, and no one here has any concerns, questions, additions, or changes. How are you with the consent agenda?
I'd like to add one thing on 5-8. I page 4.
Okay.
Item 11.
Okay.
Councilor McAfee, regarding the recruitment of the assistant city manager, could you please add, because one of my oppositions was that our budget could not sustain too high level position.
Okay. You just wanted to be sure that's in there, and that's all?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
What page was that again?
Page 4. What paragraph is that? It's item number 11. Is it the big paragraph?
The second paragraph.
Oh, okay. Second paragraph. Got that, Patty?
Okay, on page 11.
Okay. All right, then. I will entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda with the addition to the Wednesday, October 27th, 2010 minutes, as requested by Councilor McAfee.
I would so move.
Seconded. It's been moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Councilor Ward, yes.
Councilor Hedges, yes.
Councilor McAfee, yes.
Mayor Shields, yes.
Councilor Ryder, yes.
Thank you. Motion passes unanimously. Okay. So, we'll move on to public comments. Anybody have anything at this time?
Just for information.
Your name?
Gloria Fleming.
Jim Fleming. Just wanted to give an information that the veterans of Levine are having their own float in the parade event tomorrow.
Oh!
So Levine will be represented.
Great!
Good.
That is fantastic. Anyone else? Comments? Sessions?
Jim, does that start at 11 or?
Starts at 11, yeah.
So
yes.
It's pretty much on the dot.
Yeah, well. Approximately 11. It won't be earlier than 11, that's for sure.
All right, then, let's move on to item number 7, presentation of city audit report by Harrigan, Brown, Price, and Cole. Would you like to,
do I need to go to the podium or?
You know, whatever you're comfortable with, if you think everyone can hear you, or if you're, or if you want to come up to the table.
You can do it right there.
Okay, I'll speak up. People can hear me. We presented your financial statements, not an audit, it's a review. Presented them to you as a draft so that you can see them there, your financial statements. We just put our report on them. But we do, of course, obviously assist in drafting these as well. So a review is less than an audit. We don't do as much work with what your internal controls and processes are, and we also don't do as much with evidence from third parties and source documents. So we don't confirm directly with the bank how much money you have, for instance. For next fiscal year, you will be over the limit where you'll have to have the full audit.
Right.
And so, just a couple things that I want to point out in here. We do give a clean report that we're not aware of any material modifications that need to be made for these financial statements to be generally accepted accounting principles. And they are full of cool statements. A lot of the stuff, information that you get on a more monthly basis is more cash in, cash out. And so these, what the adjustments that we made to those are pretty much just timing things. And we had some timing adjustments that affected the beginning of the year balance as well. Some of the money, some pretty significant amounts of grant funds that you spent in the prior fiscal year should have had a grant receivable associated with them that wasn't booked. So we went ahead and corrected that beginning balance so that this year is showing just the activity for this year. The budget is the most important place probably to look at just a couple things. On page 10 are your balances at the end of the year. So this is your carryover to the new year. You closed out the tourism fund this year. And Rick and I have talked about whether or not you wanted to set up a transient room tax as a separate fund or not, and that can be done at budget time. Is when would be appropriate to do that. Or any other thing that you have as a specific bucket of money that you're going to have to track what you spend it on, a separate fund is the easiest way usually to do that.
Okay.
If it's just a short-term thing, you can run it through the general fund, but if it's going to continue,
That's probably better way to track. So at the end of the year, on this page 10, it does show how much you had designated for tourism. 18,992 was the amount there that you still had left of tourism funds unspent. You have your streetlight grant, and then street is in a separate fund, and I am glad to see that, because that's constitutionally restricted revenue that has to be used for roads. And then your regular general fund carryover was about 246,000, so that's a good cushion. You need to be building that up a little bit, just because the city will always have to get by until this time of year when property taxes come in, so you have to have at least a half a year's budget in the bank, basically, on July 1, so that you can pay your bills without borrowing. The revenues and expenses are summarized on page 11, again, for both food and for tourism. Property taxes were up quite a bit. Some of your other revenues were up. The franchise fees and such were up. And your spending was actually down. And most of that's just because of the timing of some of those grant expenses. Last year you had quite a bit of startup. You bought the road stuff. You had the comprehensive plan department, CCLB grant. So some of those expenses were not recurring kind of items. I didn't have any cases where you went over budget, so that's always a good thing. Pretty straightforward as far as you don't have a lot of debt, you don't have a lot of capital assets at this point. It's just money coming in and money going out for normal operating kind of things. The budget statements are on pages 20 and 21, and just a quick summary on those is that you actually were able to take in even more tax money than was budgeted. I've been worried about how much tax money people are going to collect. It turns out bank-owned properties pay very timely. You know, when we thought the economy was going to hurt, if they got foreclosed on, they'll get paid. And when we look at the property taxes that you don't collect, it's county-wide. It's not just La Pine. So the county collects all the taxes for the whole county and just gives you your percentage of whatever was collected county-wide. I say none of the categories were over budget. You didn't spend too much. We looked at quite a few things for the Secretary of State in the back. Let's see. Are they uncollected property taxes? You can see on page 25. So there's about $20,000 as of the first of the year that you had not collected in taxes. And every year you'll get a little bit of collection on those old years. It takes like 5 years before they get foreclosed on for taxes if they're just not paying taxes. But usually you make it all up with interest, and over time you get all of the taxes that you levy, is historically what happens. The comments that we make for the Secretary of State in the back are, we have to comment on internal control, although, like I say, we don't do as much as we would if we were auditing. You still have very limited, what we call segregation of accounting duties. Not very many people. For the checks and balances that you might like to see in a larger organization. I gave them a couple suggestions of some things that can be done, separate logins for the QuickBooks, somebody reviewing the bank statements besides just Mary doing her bank reconciliation. Of course, you guys just keeping an eye on what you expect to see as money coming in and going out. Check signings, two signers, which is great. The policy is that I think it's any two signers. I'd like to see one of those signers always be a council member. I think generally it has been, but that's not really in the policy. And next year when we do the audit, we have some other suggestions because, like I say, with an audit, we do go through that in quite a bit more detail. Everything else that we were required to look at as far as your fidelity bonding and your budget procedures and how your funds are invested were all positive comments that we make to the Secretary of State. And once this document's been reviewed by you, if you have any changes, let me know. Otherwise, we'll be ready to issue it as a final. It's due.
Maybe we put it on our agenda next meeting to approve it.
Okay. That would be fine.
Just kind of gives you a chance to look at it and things if you have some questions. But then we'll just have it on our agenda at the December meeting for approval.
Yeah. There is one section that kind of is a forward-looking outlook on the future that if anybody would like to embellish, that's fine. We kind of left it with just some of the things you're working on and on the budget and such, but hard to have a lot of questions when we put that much in front of you right away, but anything come to mind?
I think your suggestion about making sure Councilman signs is good, and I think that probably always happened until I got here. That just, there was no me here, so there was Luana and one of you. Then Luana would give them to me, and sometimes I would sign them. So I think that's very good. And then having different logins into the computer, I think, is important. And
yeah.
If we change systems, we'll talk about later. There's a lot of things we could do on that. But I'm pretty, we have a volunteer budget officer. And what Mary does, and that all of this has turned out pretty good. You're in a very good cash position. I mean, you've done a great job with your cash. A lot of cities don't have 5 months, let alone six, or seven, or eight. So you've done very good with your cash.
Yeah, and just because you are such a young city, you've got these revenue sources, and you're still trying to feel out what needs done and where to prioritize that money, and that gives you quite a few options then as you look at budgeting for the future.
Yeah, because we don't have the history to know what kind of things are going to come out for us to be the most sensitive or anything. You're probably aware of, and have been before, the fact that every month we get the check detail and profit and loss statement. Counselors, that's just another check and balance that we have. Counselors have all of that. And sometimes there's a question that counselor will ask, why was so much spent on this, that, or the other, or what exactly does this item mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then we did talk about the transit room tax, and that, I think you agreed, was probably one that we should separate. It's called the one-year unseparation. It had been separated, and then internally here, or somehow, I think your budget officer thought it was more work or easier or something to put it back into the general fund. And transit room, and over time, we'll have more effects because you take on sewer and water and everything else, but it really keeps it separate. And transit room tax is a place that people all focus in on. You could spend $1 million and they wouldn't look at that page, and they're going to run to that transit room tax if there's 10 grand extra in it. Because their vultures circle City Hall over transient room tax. And that's a fact in every city. COVA gets it from Bend or Deschutes County. I mean, that's just a fact. And by keeping it separate, like when she made the statement, I'm sure that already someone thought, oh, now there's extra transient room tax. I know that went into someone's ear in this room. So then they wonder, wow, now what's that about? And when it's lost in the general fund, it's hard to describe. So if we keep it separate, we know what we've given the chamber, we know we've given them to those other little groups and everything, and then if there's a carryover, it rolls right back to the top to start the next year as a beginning fund balance. When it's over in the general fund, it is harder to track, and it's in with all kinds of other numbers, and they can't get their arms around it. So next year, when we're doing the budget, I think we should go ahead and let it separate out, and
And then maybe other things with your general fund money that you want to set aside for, that you're saving for or something. And there's actually a new rule going into effect for next June 30's financial statements that does need to be done with the resolution by year end to say on here that it's committed to a specific purpose. There'll be a couple different levels there, but if before June 30 you know you're setting money aside for something specific, take that action and then we'll make sure it's reported that way.
We're going to start having other revenue sources come in, and it's, because right now we're not providing a lot of things, but there's things we're going to need to provide or want to do.
Mm-hmm.
If we wanted to start setting aside money for something, say I was thinking the road fund,
mm-hmm.
Say if it's First Street, or it's paving a street in Cable Subdivision, and we know it's going to be $250,000, and we say, you know what, we'd like to set aside 25 grand a year for the next few years and try to raise half of that. The problem is if you keep it in there and they see that fund growing, again,
mm-hmm.
go outside and there's things in there certainly. and because, but if you say it's for this project, they don't seem to bother so much. So Do you ever see that?
Yeah, you can set up, usually they're set up as a reserve fund. Not so often for roads, because the street fund money is already always restricted for roads. But for anything you're saving for, you can set it up as a separate fund, do an annual transfer in, and the statute just says when you set up a reserve fund, you have to revisit it at least every 10 years to make sure it's still needed. And that sometimes that you specify when you set it up, if you don't spend it all, what happens to it? You know, does it go back to the street fund? Does it go back to the general fund?
Rick, you were anticipating we would approve this
December meeting.
First meeting in December. Okay, so in the interim, if counselors have questions, would you prefer email or telephone? Or
either way is fine.
And how
Rick has all my contact information.
Okay.
Yeah. I said Michelle Rich, my colleague here, is the one who actually did a lot of the work digging through the clinical trials and asking some of those questions of staff that helped put all this together.
I talked to visiting Candy yesterday.
And then it is due with the Secretary of State by the end of the year, so just let them let me know once it's approved and ready to go for them.
Okay.
Want to approve, we can put it on email for him and email it out, and then we can send it to him and
I do a PDF for the Secretary of State. They like it electronic now, too. So.
Okay.
Great. Council Board, any questions, comments?
No, I'm perfectly happy with what I see here.
Good.
Thank you.
Council Hedges?
I have none.
Council McAfee?
No, I thought it was a very good report, very comprehensive.
Thank you. Councilor Greiner?
I'm fine.
Everything's
fine with me.
Well, so far we have no questions for you. We'll see how that goes in the next
hour. Thanks.
We'll let you actually read through it.
Thank you. Thanks for your work.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, once again, another very good clean audit review. We're good at what we do. Any public comment or question on the audit? Just for fun? Okay. We will move on to item number 8, selection of architectural firm to the feasibility study for the new City Hall. I believe Councilor Ward has a report on that for us.
Well, last week, 7 of us got together. The 7 comprised our city manager, Mr. Allen, Councilor Hedges, myself, Councilor-elect Stu Martinez, Jim Fleming from the Community Kitchen, and Sharon from our bank, and Mrs. Sylvia Shield, a good representation of the government, the business community, and the people who live here. Our job was to interview 4 different architectural firms who will do the review of the building we're looking at for the City Hall. In case nobody knows, we're looking at the building directly across the street, the old big green Remax building, which is up for sale. It's owned by the bank right here in the corner. And it is the best opportunity for a City Hall in town. It will take some remodeling on the inside. It will take some additional parking spaces. That's why we have to hire a company to go in and do a survey and give us a price, because Rick can't go look for financing until he knows how much we're going to spend. The only hang-up that we saw with the building is that if we use the upstairs, we have to put in a $100,000 elevator to be ADA compliant, so we thought that we wouldn't use the upstairs. That we could probably put in the area for a elevator, but not put it in. Put it in later. We interviewed 4 companies, 2 from Bend, 1 from Portland, 1 from Coos Bay, and after 4 hours of getting pitched, we met in the next room, which is this room, and we all together decided on one company. We didn't have any problem picking one, and that was a company called HSR right here in Bend. they seem to have the most expertise. They seem to have all the answers to all the questions that we asked. The price is about $9,600 for them to do the job, but we can have a contract that says if the whole thing falls apart halfway through the process, then we don't have to pay the whole bill. We only pay it up to what they've done. So that's our recommendation, is to ask the council to approve this company, HRS, to do the work, and for our city manager to continue with looking for the financing. And we were all totally in agreement. There was no disagreement whatsoever between all seven of us, which is pretty rare. So, any questions, either directed at me or the city manager, or on the council?
It is HSR, in case it's being recorded there, not yes. HRS. You said HRS the last time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're right. I'm sorry.
I just correct you. Okay. Yeah. I thought they were very good. I'm in agreement.
Too.
I like the way they work together. So.
They, what I'll do is, you know, we may change some of the things that we need. The price may go down. Actually, we'll change some things in what it is. But that remains to be seen exactly how that turns out. If we use USDA, it's more complicated. If we don't use USDA, which I'm working on the CO or Lee Gordon cities and the counties, and I have to come back with a resolution from you, I think, but they've got some 4.5% money at 20 years, so that is not too different than USDA without a whole lot of hassles. And the USDA seems to be very busy right now working on other things, and so I'm thinking that maybe a different route is better and quicker. It's important to remember we've got two or three buildings we're looking at, and you know, this is one, but we do have a couple others. But real estate deals we never talk about in open session by Oregon law, and because obviously that can affect prices, offers, all kinds of things. But we do have two or three buildings we're looking at, and at the time we make an offer, we'd have an executive session, and we would discuss that, and they would make an offer on a particular building. That's one of the exceptions to the Oregon open meetings laws, because to handle real estate transactions. So, and we need this feasibility study regardless. It'll tell us, you know, this room holds this many, you know, we could get some more in here, but do we want to have a 30 or 40, or just the whole layout and how we do all of that. And so we'll look at these room buildings and see which ones will work for us, and go from there. But we'll probably spend, you know, $500,000 on a building with a remodel, and this is probably the reality. We can find some that are, right now, property buildings are fairly cheap because people are needing to get rid of them. So it'd be exciting, and it's one of the things we have to have, as we all know. Well, so yeah, I appreciate your support. HSR did a good job. They've done a lot of other projects in the region, little ones, ADA-type stuff, remodels. I think they did this, seemed like the Prangle City Hall, or several of them. And I've actually worked with them. I mean, I know them over my years of government stuff. So they did a daycare center that I was involved in with the county in Jefferson County. So yeah, hopefully you guys will approve this.
Okay. Councilor Greiner, any comments?
I feel like we should go along with the recommendation.
My thought is that's the reason why we form committees and such to do these things, is to bring back a recommendation so that we don't all, every one of us, have to do everything and have confidence in those who did the interviews and the recommendation that they came back with. So I too feel that we should go along with that.
Is it better value than buying land and building it?
Yeah, by far.
Scratch.
Okay. Even if you paid, I don't know what land goes here, but if it's $5 a foot or $10 a foot, we've got two realtors here.
How much the residential?
Is it got to be $5 or $10 or something?
Yeah, that would be high.
Well, $2, some number. Yeah. So if you take an acre, this is 2 acres, I believe, something like that. But if you take some of it's down under the thing, but yeah, you figure you spend $100,000 on land, you know, and government buildings to meet the ADAs and all the brand new, you'd spend probably $200 a foot per government building. City of Madras' new city hall, I think, is coming in like $300, and so yeah. So if you build, say, a 5,000 foot building at $200 a foot, that's $1 million. And then you have to go finance that. So this is, whatever we do, we'll spend half.
Councilor McAfee, did you have any comments?
Yes, I was wondering if that was the lowest bid.
No.
So it was not?
Nope.
And so what was the criteria? That we chose HSR.
You can ask them. What we had is we had some questions that we asked them that we handed out. The HSR had done more smaller projects, more that were remodels of existing buildings, and had a much more apparent, you have to go on what they tell you, a much more involvement in helping you find your funding, and then if you change funding, they'll change with you. Two of the architects tend to show us buildings that were all $1 to $5 million, very little, if any, discussion on funding, USDA, and other options like that. It was kind of just out of their way. And then the other thing you get into with this kind of stuff is it's kind of like hiring your attorney, you're hiring a doctor. It's low bid is low bid's one issue, but then the one that was the lowest was going to charge $800 to give a presentation to the city council because they're driving from Portland. So then you have to take their low bid, add $800. Then you get into, if they have to make an extra trip, they're coming from Portland, and it's 50 cents a mile, where the one from Bend is close, and another guy said, I won't charge you at all. So it's, you don't know how many trips it's going to take. And these were all within a couple $1,000. So the low was 75 and the high was 90 something, and so you're dealing with kind of small numbers, and then we start adding 800. So I maybe defer to the council members.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and thank you, and thanks to the committee.
All right, you're welcome.
Do you have any questions from the audience on what they were planning on doing?
All right then. No?
I just wanted to bring out too the consideration about the rent that you're paying. You know, I would think that at some point would be, because the rent will continue to go up, you know, so at some point you probably would be at a break even by purchasing your own building, so.
Well, we've said it before, most of you are regulars here. If you're going to take on sewer and water, you have to have a place for the building clerk. If you're going to have a city manager, you have to have an office for the city manager. So, you know, those decisions you've already made. You as a community said we're going to have a city manager. We've said we're going to assume sewer and water. You said you're going to form a city. You've got to have a city hall. It's like building a house or buying a business. It costs so much to do it. Right now is a good time to buy. Interest rates are low. It's kind of like that decision's a foregone conclusion.
And we have a renter.
And we
have
a renter.
Jim?
The only thing I was going to reiterate on HSR was they were very up to date on USDA.
Yes.
The other ones were not. So they would have been, if you guys do go at USDA, they would have been a lot more knowledgeable than the other three.
Yeah. Okay, if there's no other discussion, I will entertain a motion to select the architectural firm of HSR for the feasibility study for the Bay City Hall, and to authorize the manager to continue the search for financing.
I would so move. I'll second.
We move and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Councilor Ward, yes.
Councilor Hedges, yes.
Councilor McAfee?
Yes.
Mayor Shields, yes.
Councilor Brimer, yes.
Motion passes unanimously. Good job, Council.
Thank you.
And committee, I appreciate your work. Okay, next up is item number 9, review of community work plan for Rural Community Assistance Corporation.
You got that, number 9, I think?
Yeah. We don't have,
What's that?
What's your name, Jake here?
Jake, no. Some of you remember Jake. The younger kid who is working with this RCAC, and you guys have done some work with them over, since you've been a city. And, you know, they're kind of a neutral party to help with us and educate us on sewer and water type issues, utility issues. They're a nonprofit organization, however, their funding really comes from the federal government, and then they are a nonprofit, and their funding is USDA. And we will use them with our utilities committee and other things, and so he's kind of laid out some targets and things. Nothing's too heavy in here, nothing, I think it's all fine, it's flexible. We mean it's something we don't want him to do, we just tell him it's free. And they want to do it, and I think that it helps us with USDA, because this is something they fund, which means they buy into it. And I think it shows we're serious and we want to play by the rules in the game and learn about running a utility. And Jake, you know, they want to help us, so.
And it says right at the start of this that this is not intended to be a legally binding document. So I guess it's basically just a statement saying that they're here to help us.
Yeah,
as we want it.
It's a, you know, use them as a service or, you know, someone that you can have do some work for you, and they'll ask some tough questions once in a while, and I can say, Price is right, and this is what they do. They do this all over Oregon, or all over the country, I'm assuming. But certainly, you know, they aren't going to bind us to anything or make us do anything we don't want to do. But they're going to attend our monthly utility meetings. They're going to do some public information campaigns, which would be nice, because people in the community want to know what it is we're doing with all of this, and so he'll help put that together. And educate the city council about water rights, wastewater use permits, and he'll help facilitate the transfer of those rights. And then we have to participate in the budgeting, share utility advisory committee goals, which means we have to communicate with him. We have to participate in the public education efforts, which we would, of course, and we have to adopt any resolutions as necessary to provide records as required for eligibility. Assumption of debt with USDA, and we're going to have to assume USDA debt because of the loans that the sewer department and the water departments have. So yeah, I think it'd be great to do this. Jake's been here a couple times, you've all met him, and he came to the last sewer and water meetings of the district.
Can we get a printout of this for each of the councilor elects?
Yeah. Yep.
Just come in and ask for it, or
will this allay some of the fears the water district has that the city knows nothing about managing the district?
In theory. How that plays out. We'll talk about that under some of my council my comments kind of a little bit toward the end of the meeting.
Can we
motion to approve it. And it'll be signed by the mayor and myself, and then the RCAC will sign it.
Okay. Public comment, questions on that? Okay, entertain a motion for approval of the community work plan with Rural Community Assistance Corporation.
I shall move.
I'll second. Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Councilor Woods, yes.
Councilor Hedges, yes. Adele?
Yes. Councilor McAfee, yes.
Mayor Shields, yes.
Councilor Ryan, yes.
What is the air conditioner?
The motion passes unanimously.
Do you want to check that? We've got air conditioner running with snow outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next item. He's the card for city manager.
Discussion of our schedule.
Oh, excuse me, discussion of November 24th session at Thanksgiving Eve. Thank you. Glad somebody's watching what I'm doing.
Our Thanksgiving Eve is when we have our work session, and I thought, A, you may want to skip that one. And then we actually have a meeting, we have a hearing next week. In other words, we've got an extra couple meetings in November already. So it would be a good month to skip it, and if we have to do a joint meeting with sewer and water, we might have to throw one in. The other thing is, at that hearing, you keep the record open 7 days, which is likely, which means, so you're going to be there for that hearing, then you're going to have to come back in a week or two to make your decision, because you're going to keep the record open. So that's going to be a two-meeting event. If you were to take testimony that night and then want to take testimony a week later, and they still can ask for 7 days, you come back for a third meeting. You are in control of that, but it's probably for sure a two-meeting event that has to keep moving. You can't put it off for 6 more weeks. So my thought is, that's a good one to skip, because you're going to be meeting 3 or 4 times officially as a council in November or early December. And but it's up to you guys.
Well, if we have anything that comes up, you know, that we really need to discuss, it would normally be our work session. Yep. We can tack it on to the end of the hearing. If you have,
yes, you know, if there's an emergency.
Something like that. It's, yeah. But that would be my recommendation. Councilor Ward?
I have the software skipping it.
Councilor McAfee?
I have no problem.
Councilor Greiner?
I wouldn't be available that night, so I have
no problem at all. Okay, I don't think we need a motion on that. Just
so we'll just not have a work session.
Okay.
Okay. Have a decent.
Okay, now we will move on to item number 11, Visa card for city manager Allen.
Yeah, we had a Visa card with, now they always attach them to a name, even though it's in the city's name, but they put a name on it. And so we only use it to make, like, usually it's for motel reservations. Sometimes we keep it here. And like when we work in cities, that's how they reserved your rooms. Mm-hmm. So it isn't used all that much, but it is something that you probably need one of. And it has to have a name attached to it. And so according to the bank, you have to have, we have to give them a copy of our minutes that approves you getting redoing the Visa card and having my name put on it.
Yep. The bank just simply won't do it unless they see that in the minutes.
Yeah.
So it's a procedural thing. So that's pretty simple. We just need a motion to approve changing the name, or changing.
And if you don't want to have a Visa card, doesn't matter to me because I don't use it for myself.
I move that we give you the city manager a Visa card.
Not a problem.
So you're seconding?
Yes.
All right. Been moved and seconded? Maybe she got mad at us.
Just have her abstain on that.
Okay. Call right back.
Call your cell phone a bit. You're back.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, she's sitting in the bathtub and drops her phone in the bathtub. Okay.
Pretty soon everyone's going to want to be on a speakerphone. The line up by a speakerphone.
Adele, did you hear that? There was a motion and a second to approve getting a Visa card for City Manager Allen.
Okay.
So, the motion has been made and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Councilor Ward, yes.
Councilor Hedges, yes.
Councilor McAfee, yes.
Mayor Shields, yes.
Councilor Blair, yes.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Council. All right. Now, we have to be sure that's in the minutes, of course.
Yeah, I told it would be a month, you know, when we get it over the minutes, but that's fine.
Okay.
Because we have to wait till you approve the minutes.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah.
That's fine.
Okay. Item number 12, other matters. This was a good time to have that because we're moving right through our meeting.
And actually, I couldn't find the cemetery. I couldn't find it, so they'll all have to wait up there.
Did you remember when?
The cemetery?
What the expiration
date
is.
Oh, my guess is most all the agreements we've been doing are July 1st. And one of the things that we need to do this next year is get all of these types of things. They need to become perpetual, and you know, you don't want to have all these agreements that you're approving every year. They're just, you know, the cemetery is going away. No one else is going to run it. And you know, you just need to have it where it's 5-year agreements or it automatically renews, stuff like that.
Right.
So, but we'll get it in December.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know what we do at the cemetery, to be honest. I drove out to it to look at it and checked around a few people out there, but.
Well, we're fortunate in that we don't do anything with it because we have this committee that runs it, and I did that for a couple of years, and it's very involved. There's a lot of work in it, and so I'm glad you brought this up because it's a good time to publicly, again, say thank you to that committee, none of whom are here, because they do a lot of work, and it is now a city cemetery. And so, at some point,
who digs out there? The sewer district.
We are so privileged; we don't even have to know because that committee takes care of it. Mm-hmm. And what they do is, they, or at least what I've known of it over the years, is the committee. That it's not a committee; it's a, I think, a corporation. I don't know what it is. Anyway, that runs it. They have a list of contractors that they will call, and of course, as you know, contractors come and go, so their list rolls all the time. So, but they always have a list of contractors, and they take care of all that stuff.
We need to pave it. We need the road out there.
Do you want to pave everything?
And plow it. Well, everything except Keiko.
Anyway, yes.
You're near the
highway. I'd like to have that in minutes that we took this opportunity again to make a public thank you to the people who run the cemetery. It's a great bunch of people, and we never have to worry about it. Okay. We'll move on to item number 13, public comments. Anyone?
I would just make a comment. Ken Mullinex, 52386 Glenwood Drive, city resident. I just heard a report on Tuesday about the cemetery, and the comment I'd make about it is for some time, Beard Mortuary has had ashes of individuals who never got claimed. And so they moved, Carol Brewer made this report, they moved to do something about that. And they checked with the state cemetery board, and they got a bunch of kadoos for doing this. And what they've done is they've contacted all the families, one more family to respond, and they're going out there and they're going to bury in our cemetery these, I think there's four of them. And they're going to put markers, which is a requirement of the state, on there. So it's well said that they are doing a great job. And this is above and beyond, basically. So.
Are these Lapine residents?
Yes. No, they're community.
Community, yeah.
The area.
Greater
Lapine. Well, that's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
I didn't know if you were bringing them in. I know where it's at. The company you were talking about, is that local mortuary?
Yeah.
Yes, it's very mortuary here.
Well, thanks for sharing that, because, it's not like this group of people is just there with nothing to do. They have a lot of detail work and things like that come up every once in a while.
and a lot of record keeping.
I want to say it's Friends of the Cemetery or something. I can't quite remember, but I've heard reports like this from them before. So.
Mm, yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. Anyone else? Wow. This is great. Good work. Move on to committee reports. Committee and commission reports. John?
Planning Commission. We are about 2 months into our research on our zoning ordinances. We have separate ordinances. There will be a sign ordinance, actual illumination ordinance, land use ordinance, and your zoning ordinances. We felt that by separating all of these ordinances, first of all, each one is much thinner for reading, and those that are concerned with a particular ordinance can go to that ordinance and only have to spend the time in there and not muddle through this 3-inch thick document. So it's going to make it much easier for people doing research, and we're very close, a couple of months from having Lapine's first zoning ordinances, and hopefully close to establishing a community development department where we will gather our own permit fees. They're now going north, making their way up to Deschutes County. Those fees will all stay in Lapine and help the our local residents here. It's going very great. Glad to be on it.
Thank you. We're glad to have you. You guys doing a great job. Gloria?
You forgot to mention that we're having an open house meeting on the zoning ordinances next
Wednesday. Public hearing.
Public hearing.
Next Wednesday.
Right.
Yes.
Next Wednesday. So.
Here.
Yeah. Please encourage people.
What time does that start?
6 p.m.
You guys start at 3?
Or was it 4?
4, I think.
It might be 4.
Yeah.
It's 4.
It's
6, you can just stay here and wait until 6.
Yeah.
So it's 4 p.m.
Okay.
Then right here, next Wednesday, November 17th.
That's the regular Planning Commission meeting. 6 p.m. is the hearing, according to the calendar.
It is.
I'll encourage people to come. We need
input.
Yes,
please.
Yes. Do you ever get any public attendance at your meetings?
Yeah. We do.
Good.
Oh, two or three at a time.
Okay. Well, that's okay.
Barbara's going to get it. This is from CYC. Did you go to CYC last week or a couple weeks ago? This came in and made me think about our consultant, John, who's working with Debbie.
James Lewis.
He wants a letter. It was from CYC thing. It's to do with, and you didn't go last time, did you? It has something to do with Redmond's Transit Center.
Right.
And they wanted us to just basically, they want to know if we can sign that and support Redmond in getting a transit center. And I just got it yesterday since you guys were meeting, and I know you're on CYC board. I thought if you guys say go for it, we'll make it into Lapine's name and sign it. It's just supporting Redmond. It doesn't compete with us in anything, and it's a good neighbor thing.
Okay, what is it you want me to do with this?
Well, just you think it's okay?
Yeah.
Because I have followed, I know nothing about it, but it's...
Okay.
And so anyway, he asked if we would do it, and I thought, you guys tell me, sure.
Okay, so they're asking for, what is it, a letter of support?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a form letter, and they just want us to Lapine it up, and, they're going to send it off to some grant agency.
It's
for a grant. They're trying to build a regional transit center in Redmond. That then these little buses that are running around right now that will come in and out of, and well, there are centers, little Head to Madras, Sisters, Prineville, Bend, and come south and north.
Tie in with Bend, too.
Yeah, the Bend one. So.
Yes.
And actually, it'll eventually get to here, too, because all of us, all of the whole areas, is incorporated into it.
The good thing about those, sometimes we may need regional support on something we're working on. We'll ask them to do a letter, and that's the.
Right. So we need to vote on this, or just council approval for?
If you guys tell me it's okay, we'll just have Patty get it all figured out for us, and we'll
Send it off?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, they've talked about that in the past, and I think it's a good idea instead of Ben having control of it all. So.
Ms. Warren, is the mortal alibi to go along with that? Assuming the fine does have a few years left, but we'll need to start fairly quickly on developing our own transportation system plan. It's required by the state, and we do have a few years left on it.
We have money in our budget to start that, and actually it's one of the things we'll start after the first of the year, hopefully, when we get this corridor plan done. The next thing we want to do is the TSP. We don't want a bunch of time in between, because otherwise all we do is study.
Yeah,
we never build any.
Developing the studies.
Yeah, the idea is to tie them in together, make it all work together.
And you can use the new city hall for a bus station.
You guys have a bus stop here somewhere, don't you?
We have a shell station.
Okay, we need to have one person at a time speaking, please. Okay. See, now we don't know where we were.
I didn't know that there was a stop, you know, at the Shell station, but they say eventually they'll get to Madras and Lapine, so it's good to have our own.
I think there's
would you state your name, please?
My name is Austin Gillette. I live out on off Burgess at near the 4 mile marker. I won't say my usual. I believe that there was some sort of stopping point. There's a little parking lot at Wickiup Junction, right at the intersection of County Road 43, Burgess, and 97. Also, the bus you're thinking about, I think, at the Shell station is Amtrak, mostly, I think. I'm not sure, but I think that's what it is. Just Amtrak.
Yeah. Okay, we need to get on with our committee reports. We have any other committee members, heads, here to report on anything? All right, then. We will move on to staff comments. Patty, do you have anything?
No, I don't, thank you.
Rick.
Okay, on my little list there. Bob, you just want to make sure you're all ready for your hearing next week, and you've got the agendas and all of that. And, you know, I've had a couple people call and ask about things on that, kind of how it will go, and Deborah and I have talked twice today, and so, you know, just be ready, make sure you're there. You know, and that could end up, depending, you know, it could be a three-hour meeting. You might make sure you eat before you get there. You know, it's one of those things that you just, if I don't know if it's 10 people or 100 people, but you want to probably take your testimony all of it right then that night. And, you know, LCDC commissions will go 7 hours. You won't, but you just need to be prepared for, just don't come there hungry. Bring your snack. You know, and we'll be set. Mid-state, we've narrowed more issues down. Jeremy and I met yesterday on that, and because they came back with a few things. One thing I'd ask you is how strongly you feel on undergrounding power lines when power lines are moved, or if there something's going in. You know, some people consider power lines fairly ugly. Some consider them beautiful, and some don't care. And when you're building your franchise agreement, is a time that you can require, because one of the things, because they're building in the right of way, you own the right of way. As I explained to a group today, just because some people can't quite understand what a franchise is and really why you do it other than you're making money off it. Well, that's true. But the land, when you incorporated, the land, the streets, became titled and owned by the residents of this city. Just the same as you own your lot. And if a cell tower wanted to come put on your property, they would only go there with your permission. They put it in the corner you want it put in, and they're going to pay you what you tell them you're willing to let it. and that's really how basic it is. Those power lines, by Oregon law, now are on your property. And the law says you can collect a franchise fee. They do not allow counties to. It's a 100-year-old law, just the way it is. And every city collects franchise fees. But in that, it's then you set the rules, just like you would at home, how you're going to build, what you review, what they build. And so this is all part of it. It's a fairly thick document. And one of the things that they've questioned is most cities, or a lot of cities, push very hard on making the power companies underground when they can, when they're putting in new stuff. Because they ultimately, when you look out 100 years, would hope those power lines are not everywhere. If you don't, when undergrounding, then of course, then the homeowner would have to pay, the developer has to pay, or they stay above ground. So I was just wondering, what's your thoughts? Because that's one that we're going to push a little harder on, but I've never asked any of you. What's your thoughts on power lines?
Never been asked by anyone. I have thoughts. When I lived where they were underground, when something goes wrong, they come in and dig it all up. And I don't mind the power lines. It seems much easier unless you're flying a kite or whatever. But it just seems simpler to repair things when they are above ground. And that was one of the things I didn't like, is they have to test and find out where it's broken and dig things up. So,
but how often does that happen compared to snow and ice and trees falling over lines and impaired drivers running into the poles and knocking things out?
It happened quite a bit. So, yeah, our power went out a lot.
I was wondering what the Planning Commission might be thinking about that.
I have something to say about that. I'm not an electrical engineer, and so to me, power lines above ground are ugly. Given away development, they are less expensive. However, if something goes wrong, Mid-State is paying for them, not the city of Lapine. They absolutely need to go underground, in my viewpoint. And also, I have a question is, to Rick, have you been discussing whether the fees, the franchise fees, will be retroactive?
They're not.
November 2006?
No. No. Because the law, we didn't have it enacted, and they can't go back and collect it from the consumer.
That's too bad. But absolutely. Laura?
Personally, I think underground is better, too. I had a discussion with Dick Russell about this, and he said they're more expensive. I would think underground, like Kitty brought up, because of all the damages and the things we've had to go through, you know, I would think they would be safer underground, below the frost line or the freeze line or whatever. So I'm still a little bit confused on it, but aesthetically, I think they, you know, it's really better. And then fire and all the other things that when you've got in among the trees, I think that's kind of bad.
Councilor Brenner?
My personal opinion is they should be underground.
Councilor McAfee?
Yes. Did Rick, did you say that it was just on new construction or?
It's not going to be defined, I think for the sake of this discussion here, I'm looking for a philosophy, because I don't want to, you know, get into the dirtiest details of it, but it's, you know, sometimes it wouldn't be because if there are major transmission lines, they can't go underground because of that causes some issues. It's, obviously new subdivisions like Crescent Creek, they're all underground.
Yes.
That developer pays for it. And that's true. If you were to do a subdivision, the developer is going to pay to bring those in. What it is because I've just done this in the last few years in another city, say we're going to go out here and fix up the highway. If there's currently above ground power lines. Actually, just pick any street. But if we were to go out doing a sidewalk project with decorative light posts, if in our franchise agreement it requires the power company to lower them, they lower them at their expense. If you don't have it in there, they can make that add on to the project cost. So they'll say, great, you're going to go put in sidewalks and street trees, but you can't do that with ugly power lines above the trees and all of that. So then you have to pay, so you'll add X amount onto the cost of that project. If power companies push back very hard on this, because they don't want to pay for that. But in our franchise agreement, the law lets us decide how this is done. But again, she mentioned someone that people know in town. The board is very connected in town, and I know where I would go, but I want to make sure that I don't turn around and I find everyone has left me. So, it's really a vision of the community. It's what you want your community to look like. And, and because they're a co-op, one of the things they use a lot when we discuss things is that means you're hurting. When you say it's going to cost them, you're hurting our members. Our members are your neighbors in the grocery store. There are neighbors you see every day. Nothing's free, so really you're saying they're going to pay for it. I mean, indirectly, that's what they're saying. So it's a matter of who pays. If we don't push hard on that, that means the city will pay, or the city residents will pay directly when we do a project. Otherwise, it's spread over the whole mid-state system.
Generally, I agree with that philosophy, the underground, both for the reasons that have been stated, both, aesthetically, and I believe that there's lower cost of maintenance when they're protected from the elements and from fire. So, I'm with you on that one.
Thank you. Councilor Ward.
Well, I think in any expanded area, like when Crescent Creek finally expands and we start building again, that should all be underground. In areas that already, where we have old, I seriously doubt if Mid-State's going to want to take on the cost of changing that. And if they did change it, it would be at their expense, not the homeowner's expense. 2 years ago, they redid all the lines on Day Road. And they didn't go underground. They put in all new poles, all from Burgess all the way down to State Rec Road. They replaced all the poles. When they could have gone underground then, but they didn't do it. Who knows why? But I think underground is preferable. But in areas like where I live, and like where Mr. Mullenix lives, I seriously doubt if Mid-State will ever want to replace
the poles. No, those poles, they'll come in just
they've been there forever. They're going to be there.
It'd be more of doing a project on a street. We're redoing a street.
But something new, yes. If it's feasible, underground is, I think, the best.
Or if an area is redeveloped or something.
If we did Huntington Road, the rest of it.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds to me like it doesn't make any difference if we're going to put them underground on a project. The taxpayer is going to pay them, or the ratepayers are going to pay them, and they're both the same roof anyway.
Well, no, that's a significant difference. Mid-State has 20,000 people that are paying into that, and you have 1,500. So it spreads the cost over the entire Mid-State base.
Which is good.
But we're also paying, it works because we're also paying for things in the Sun River area. I like the idea of underground where things change and, where there's new development or, I like it being a requirement. Stu.
Stu Martinez, 514. Something. Morrison, living within the city. First comment is, as Mr. John here brought up, is too bad it's not retroactive because, and I'm sorry, but when the city was first incorporated, Mid-State was one franchise that I wanted to see happen. And there were some other counselors at the time that didn't agree with that. We would have already had this agreement in place Wendy's spinning our wheels again right now.
Okay.
That said and done, that's in the past. We're moving forward. As far as underground or overground, Tom Wilson had a chamber breakfast. Evidently, they are doing some new projects. Approached me about our site in the industrial park. And evidently, they're doing something, and he wanted to know my opinion of overhead or underground, high voltage lines. So they're out there asking. So I think if the city has it in their power to recommend overhead or underground,
this
they need
the
to
time.
Think of underground, especially in an industrial park where you have heavy equipment. We just saw here not too long ago, maybe not an, it was not an impaired driver, but they took out a fire hydrant. Okay, that's above ground. We have a lot of heavy equipment out in the industrial park. A truck on the ice could slide off and hit a high tension pole. That happens to your industrial park. So the more you can put underground, I think the safer it is for the community and for the ratepayer. So, my thought. Thank you.
Thank you. Patty?
I just put my glasses back.
Oh, sorry.
Well, Dan, would you report here from a chamber perspective?
All I was going to say is sometimes we assume underground is a lot more expensive and forget that the excavation here in Lapine isn't that difficult. It goes pretty fast. It is. Sometimes you have to disturb stuff that's in place and all that, but as we move forward, people generally try to put it underground, and it also has an effect on property values. It makes your property more valuable when you have underground power lines.
Well, it sounds like you're hearing from all of the people who generally speak for the community.
It sounds like we have consensus from the audience. And,
No. I just started to comment. I'm not this, Ponderosa Pines, you guys might go out there and look. I think they have a hybrid where the parts of the roads are underground, and then they have the feeds come in, high voltage down the forestry roads and whatever, and then they feed it underground. I think that's what they do.
In this agreement, not every power line is going to go underground, but it just, I don't have it in front of me how that's worded, but it's... We have the ability to force it at times, and if this is the time you want to get it in your agreement. But they have pushed back at this point on that is one of their items, and there's several. But that's one that I thought, I wanted to get your input on. The others I'm guessing your thoughts on at this point, because I think they're just kind of prudent, good business stuff. They've asked to exempt some businesses and companies and things, and those are non-starters. We're not going there. There's a whole lot of franchise agreements in Oregon to look at, and if there's they all handle things pretty well the same. But I think that because, and this is a great group, Mid-State, I mean, they're fantastic, they're good corporate citizens here, and everything's good. It's just they don't have another city in their jurisdiction. See, if you went to Central Electric Co-op, they got Redmond, they got Sisters, they're used to this. PP&L has them everywhere. So when you go in and talk about it, they argue over a couple of things that they just know. But I think here you have a board, you have management that for 20 years here, as long as management's been here, and the board members that you all know around the city, this is all new to them. And that's why Cascade Gas, you had no trouble.
Yeah.
Quest, you had no trouble. Those companies are used to these. It's part of doing business.
We did have trouble with Quest. That was a battle.
Yeah. But it's not local and personal.
Yeah, but it was a battle. Jeremy and Jenny worked through that one.
So anyway, that's that. So we'll be meeting with them, I think, in the next couple of weeks. We proposed a date next week or something. So that takes a little time. The sewer, I think I'll do the comp, go back to the sewer market. The comp plan, we ran here, Elsa doing another meeting, the LCDC group, we had a pre-meeting, and Doug kind of came in and listened there for a while. When we were doing that, when I had the LCDC group in there, you heard me discussing lots and density. I think you heard me.
I did, but I didn't understand what that gentleman was talking about.
Well,
I didn't do his part, but I didn't.
Our comp plan has been in for a few months, and then they've had their couple months, and they've done their review. First, you did public comment. The people could have appealed. No one did. That's good. So, Thousand Friends didn't say anything, and some of the other groups. But the department has some problems with the parts of our comp plan, and there's a whole list of things, and they were worried about me seeing it because they said I'd come unglued, and they. Which they know me well enough, because I've had this debate over when you've been doing this for 25 years, you've had these discussions, and they're the same players, some of them. So they knew where I would go because I knew what the community would want, and you know, there's several issues, but one of them is density. Bottom line is LCDC generally wants you on Northwest Crossing size lots if they could do it. Those are the little ones with the alleys with 4,000 feet, and if you can turn 10 times with your F-150 or 250, you can get it turned. And I explained to them in several languages, and I only speak one. I only speak one fluently, and that I don't think that Lapine wants postage stamp size lots. And so what they don't like, one of the things, they don't like our density that's been proposed. Now, what the group and the Planning Commission has done when they put this together, it cuts our density, I think, almost in half when you look out. So we're cutting our average lot in half of what it is today, but that's not quite where they want it to be. And so I explained to them, in, like say, in my languages, that this community was going to not accept any small lots. And so that's going to be worked out with the department, I think. And so we have the Deputy Director here. And they came just to discuss this. They made us a trip. And then we had two of the regional managers here and everything else. So look for issues. They right now, you know, got a lot of things they don't like, but they're going to work through some of it. And then they may ask us for an extension, which I think we would grant. Again, that's a good neighborly thing, because they may want another 60 days to work it through. Because otherwise, this will go to the LCDC Commission, which has been appointed, of course, by Kulongowski, very liberal. And they will come with the department will argue against what we've submitted, the staff. And it's very hard to get that commission to not go with the staff. So, but the department, the guys that were here, they want to work through this. So it's just, I want you to know there's a process, and I'm engaged in it, and Deborah is engaged in it, and we're working on politicking this through. And it may take another month or two. And then we'll see. But again, I feel that you people don't want 4,000 foot Northwest Crossing lots.
I do think they got your message. From what I observed, I think they understood it.
I understood
isolation.
So you can still have them, but
not
everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. And we have areas where we do have them.
Yeah.
You know, you can go like this and touch the two neighboring houses.
Well, there was some trade-offs. There were some trade-offs done too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, having some areas that would have higher density.
Exactly.
That. Yeah. So the apartments and that type of thing.
Some people don't need them, you know, in like habitat out there. They're very small.
Yeah. Bull Crescent Creek are smaller. How big are those now?
I'm not really sure. I know that we're happy with our lot.
Yeah. And you're going to have some subdivisions like that, but then what throws it is your lots, K-goal, they're the acre lots. So when you do this mix, it makes your average lot bigger. That's what I think throws them.
Yeah, it's the way they're looking at it.
Because you were an unincorporated area that had bigger lots. Because you had septic, and one of the points I argued was under this septic system, the sewer system you have here, even when you're in the city, it's not like any other city where you just have a pipe. You still have a holding tank. Yeah. And that requires to be in your front yard. You know,
backyard.
Backyard, you know. And so it requires,
your garage door,
you know, a little bit bigger lot.
At Crescent Creek, the cottages, those little ones with the one side's on the property line, one side of your house is on the property line, and then there's a space, and then the next house is on the property line. So that's pretty much, those were specially kind of allowed, there were 4,000 foot lots.
Planned unit development.
Yeah. So those are 4,000 foot, but out there, they're probably, a lot of them 8,000, some are 12,000 foot lots in Crescent Creek. And so the 4,000 that they're kind of pushing for, or 6,000.
And I don't know their number, you know what?
I think 6,000 is kind of what they want to see. That's like some of the smaller lots in Crescent Creek, except for those little cottage lots.
Well, our lot's not built on, the house is not built on the property line. We're kind of sit in the center. But I mean, I know what you're talking about because there's one section of Crescent Creek that you could spit from one to the other and
well, Crescent Club
just blew up the whole side of the house, just one spit.
Well, glad you're fighting for us, Rick.
Yes.
I have a comment.
Yes.
So, Rick, did we receive official notification of what the opposition was, or what the...
It's in draft, non-public form.
Okay, and then...
And so we're working, what they want to do is work through it, you know, we're trying to work through it with them, because I think that they don't want a Ben UGB bulletin fight.
Probably not.
So that's what we're doing. It's all draft form. They're still going through it. It's not meant for the public. They won't send it out. I'm not sending it out. Some of them were housekeeping in nature. I mean, there were things like you didn't have your Lapine Parks and Rec District plan. Well, Deborah says it was attached. Doesn't matter. We can attach it and give it to them again. There wasn't the master plans of the sewer water districts. Well,
I would be interested in reading it and see what the...
Yeah, you'll be able to when it's not at this point. It is in not that form.
What do you mean it's not that form? I understand.
I can't. I won't be mainly emailing that out to you, no.
Okay.
Any other comments, questions? John?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment that, you know, we'll work this out. I mean, it'll be worked out. And, you know, there may be, like Laurie said, there may be some trade-offs, or maybe a few areas we might look at, you know, and just within this room to come up with smaller lots for higher densities to satisfy DLCD. But we're holding out till the cows come home as far as our comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan is what Lapine residents want. The state is sitting over in Salem. They can want all they want, and they can do something on one hand, you know, and see what they get. But we will hold out as long as we'll be here.
And so what will happen eventually, if there's disagreement, it will come to the Planning Commission. And then, of course, everyone will be able to see it. But right now, really, it's staff to staff. And that's what's going on. I mean, I'd love to share it with everyone. It's not secret in that sense. It's just your staff and their staff are
hammering
it out. And my thing is, I just want you to know that they aren't happy with all of what we've done. And right. A big part of it is lot size.
And as Rick said...
John, what were you...
They have enough problems with being in Central Oregon. They don't need more Central Oregon problems.
Okay. Adele, go ahead.
Oh, so then, so from your response, then I guess the objection is not official. Is that correct?
Well, coming from them, I mean, it's official. They're the staff that's reviewing it, and they're saying they have some concerns over these.
They haven't put it together themselves yet, Adele. We'll get it when they get it.
Yeah, and you know, they don't let me right now. It's just, I mean, I think everyone gets that. It's. I'm just trying to keep you abreast that there's an issue out there, and your staff is working with their staff.
And you know, the council is ultimately responsible.
Yeah, you will get it. Sorry, I brought it up. I wouldn't have had
to. We haven't finished working on it. We don't know what their decision will be, so we can't work on a decision until we get it. So that's simply what it is. It's just in the planning stages, if you will, right now.
Staff to staff working through these things is kind of like when you have a committee working on something and then they come back and bring a recommendation to the council or
bring their input or whatever. We're waiting for that to come. When it's ready, we'll get it.
Rick knows our reasoning for what we did, and so does Deborah. So, I mean, it's like John said, this was well worked out in the community. This is what they said.
And you're in there fighting for the community against. And Deborah warned us right up front at the early on when we had our comp plan meetings that that we'd be experiencing this because we do want to maintain the small town feel. And she warned us early on that we would lock horns a little bit with the LCD. And she said they like to come across as being real, real inflexible, but, you know, they'll bend. You just have to keep, it's a back and forth thing. Just
we may get it worked out.
If DLCD didn't have a problem, they wouldn't be able to collect their paycheck down in Salem. So this is just one of those things that they must do on every project.
Job security.
Thank you, John, you're making me feel better.
It's an authority thing.
One of the things I was going to say is we had the same problem with that grant we're trying to get from over there. And they had a problem with the property that we wanted to get.
When you say we,
Community Kitchen.
Thank you.
And we brought it before the county commissioners, and Dennis Luke, he laid it right out. Is over there, they deal in lots. Over here, we deal in acres.
They
can't understand that.
They don't.
That's the problem.
Okay, any more discussion on that?
Okay, sewer and water. We were going to have a joint meeting here a while back, a week ago or something, and then we canceled that. And the staffs were going to get together. That's not going to happen now either with the attorneys. The sewer and water districts are not as warm to us merging and withdrawing as might have been portrayed at our joint meeting we had here. There's a little back and forth going on right now. The question, if you remember our last meeting, these meetings, believe me, start to run together in my brain. So when I say last meeting, could have been a meeting and a half back, but it seemed like when we were here on this topic, it was they wanted the annexation of Cable Subdivision. And they were asking us to approve that. Then we got into we would maybe agree to that, we would consider that if we did an IGA that said if you can get funding from USDA by January 31st, and if you can bid it, engineer it, build it, or start construction by December 31st, if you could get that into an IGA that we could work out, we would maybe, obviously until you get the document and you see it, but the theory was we could maybe go that way. And, it was a little further out than I wanted, and others I think here, but, I thought if you're going to work together, it works out, then that's beneficial. We then spent our money, Jeremy put together the IGA, which was the other one, and then we added some of these dates and did some of these other things we talked about. And of course it had to be done quickly, so they did that. And then that went to them, and then their attorney then came back with a whole list of things that they kind of wanted, and they didn't like the dates and so on. So that was kind of just then floundering out there for the last week. I didn't really know what exactly, how we were going to handle that. And that's why the staff and the attorneys were going to get together. We were going to see if we could work through this. Then, I think Kitty did get the letter, but the USDA sent a letter out at the request of the districts. And the USDA didn't do this on their own, stating that they don't know that unless the districts allow the transfer of the loans to the city, the USDA has some federal law or rule that would not allow those loans to be transferred. So the gist of that is that the districts have to agree to this, and if they don't agree, then it can't happen. So that then caused the districts to, I think, get a little kick of energy or life that they may be able to stop the city from causing the withdrawal.
Wasn't it, they're the ones who have to initiate, have to put in the request.
Right,
for
they have to agree, they have to initiate.
Yeah.
So if they were to send a letter and saying, we want to, we're going to agree with the withdrawal, and so on and so forth, USDA can work on this and transfer all the loans and grants, and it all is very clean, and you don't spend a lot, the community doesn't spend a lot of legal money or time. If the districts won't do that, then it becomes, according to USDA, what the information that they have. Now, this is one employee sending a one-page letter saying, we're not sure that you can do your withdrawal or merge the districts. Our initial look at that is, we're not sure that's true. And we found that throughout this process, where we would go in and check things and find out what somebody says isn't necessarily true. And this is only three-day-old news, so again, I met yesterday with a couple of the attorneys on this, and we're now they're searching case law. The sad thing is, it just costs money. And so when you see illegal bills, you will see them higher. I mean, this costs money. It isn't no one's fault. Jeremy can't, do anything about this. And he said, make sure the council knows. I mean, it does cost money. And so the districts are spending money, the city's spending money, and you know whose money that is?
Ratepayers and taxpayers.
Where this goes, I don't know at this point, because this is all fresh stuff. We are going to be, they'll be getting a letter tomorrow asking for the due diligence on the withdrawal. So things like, we want their as-builts, we want all of their contracts, all their leases, all their licenses that they have. So like anything, if you were buying a business or something, you want to know all of this. So they will officially be getting that tomorrow. Jeremy is meeting with their attorney tomorrow, and he will be delivering that letter to them. And then I will also get it via email tomorrow, and I will then send it to the district. So our position is, we're moving forward on the withdrawal as planned, and the council has not told me or suggested we not do that. In fact, I know some of you felt you wanted to keep it moving anyway. And so unless I hear anything different from any of you, we will continue moving on the withdrawal as planned, which right now that date is July 1st. It may end up being a month or two after that or something else, but I mean, the target is July 1st for the withdrawal, and we will just continue on that process.
Does council see it any differently?
No, I think we should continue with the way you said. We shouldn't be any more going backwards, because that's what's happening. We're going backwards, so we should go forward.
Councilor Hedges?
I agree. Go forward.
Councilor McAfee?
Move forward.
Councilor Greiner?
Move forward.
Mayor Shields says move forward. Continue on.
And I did talk to Ms. Swires at USDA just on the funding of the Cagle subdivision in general, and they don't know how much yet, because it's not been engineered. The bottom line is USDA is out of money, and they have way more applications than they have money. So they won't be able to fund this, even if you get the applications in. And then they're going to have to go out and find other funding sources, and that is going to be a several month process. January 31st, they would have never met. This is basically what I was told. So if we agreed to the IGA, it wouldn't have worked. So, the other thing to remember that I think that the district needs to realize is that if we work this out and it's a full complete, where they basically cease functioning and we take it over, under Oregon law, the employees come to work for us. But because part of the district is actually outside the city, if we do this the way we're going to have to, the district still stays in existence, which means it's not going to trigger the employees coming to work for us. Now, the employees will have a small piece of land with no customers. I'm not sure what they'll be doing, and I'm not sure if the district can afford to keep paying them. However, we would not be bound under the Oregon laws to assume them. And interestingly, in the job applications, I have got a couple of three people that are they're into public works and everything, why they thought they would like the job that we've put out. But nevertheless, you know, you get all kinds of applicants. So there are some people in there. So it could be down the road, you new council, we may be starting the process to find our own public works employees that will be with us as we move down the road operating the sewer and water districts. Certainly our goal, and I know your goal, is that the districts would agree, we stop spending money, we can start working with those employees and they would come to work for us, and they'd be able to continue their employment in Lapine doing what they've done. That's seamless. It's what we should do. But if the districts choose to not allow this withdrawal, and those boards are going to stand by that, that's fine. They have that power. We cannot make them do anything different. We will continue. And as I emailed Donna yesterday, the state of Oregon laws allow us to withdraw. Deschutes County has made it very clear that we, and they support us assuming these districts. The voters of Lapine have said they support it when they incorporated, and the current city council supports it. The new city council folks have said on many occasions they support it. I think the broader community supports it. It's time to move on. It's time to look at the bigger picture and stop wasting basically time and money. It is, in fact, everyone in this room. But they do have the ultimate control over that, and there is nothing any of us can do. So, with your blessing, we'll continue forward with the withdrawal, and then if we have to start hiring employees, we'll start doing that too, and go from there.
Well, you've gotten the going on. Boy, who needs nighttime soaps? All right here.
More
Okay, did you have anything else that you didn't have on
your list? We have to do a needs assessment for the COIC thing, you know, and I'm not real big on that, but we're doing it. And what I put down right now, I did one, I've already submitted it, and they responded back, and this would be our corridor study. So we stay on track. That would be First Street through town. And I put it down as a top priority of infrastructure and explained why, the many reasons we've talked about. I included the signal, streetscaping, the whole thing, and say that's a top priority so we get Lapine looking good when you come in from either direction, when you come into Lapine. And he said they'll make that a top priority or put it on the thing, so I'm doing that.
Well, that gets it out there.
Yes,
it.
But I think what I'm thinking about doing is doing two more of these. One would be First Street down to the schools and do it under the Safe Routes to Schools. Mm-hmm. And then do Huntington as more of a streetscape. And then we'll do our triangle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, which we basically, where's Huntington?
Yeah, that is it.
Yeah.
That is it.
Huntington, here. Yeah, this is our top priority. Get this done from here to here. Then it always are different pots, and what I was thinking was if we could get this and this tied together, we could do them all at once. This is several years out. I'll be long gone. But
what's this and this?
What's that?
I'm sorry, what's this and this?
Oh, I'm showing you the Huntington First Street. I'm up at a map. There's a picture. I'm up at a map on the wall. I can't help you with that. But anyway, I think that's really, you know, for federal and state money, for the city, it'd be kind of that. And, you know, one could come before the other and everything else, so. And Liddy's going to send in their letter for First Street, because they got it sent to them, and they're going to put in for signalizing first. So we're trying to zone in, not have everyone going 40 directions.
Good.
And really try to move this up the food chain.
Sounds good. Ken?
Ken Miller-Ranks, city resident. Rick, at the ERT, you said something about, and does this apply, is really what I'm saying, of what you just stated, about the ODOT yard?
Oh, right here?
Yeah. Is there a way to put that apart and just to get that out of there?
Well,
or move it.
I mean, if you put it on the list,
I mean, in general, ODOT, let's say move it.
Well, except if we're asking them for money, I don't know if we want to pick on them too hard. I'm thinking
landscaping.
See, if we have our streetscape on both sides, they're going to have to put in curbs and sidewalks and street trees, and then the trees kind of shade them.
Get the money first.
We could put that, yeah, I could send that in as an other.
It's a different
amount
of money.
You know, it's not
put it on the radar.
Yeah. And a discussion for those Adele and others who aren't in here, but we, well, she's only not here, but I was teasing them about, we have the gravel pile when you come from this end, and you get the county gravel pile from this end, and that's your entrance to each end of town is cinder pits, where most towns have a welcome thing.
Rick, Eugene is going to have the biogreen plant as the entrance.
Out there.
Right on the highway.
Yeah.
So we can't be much worse off.
And then we'll have the geothermal at the other end.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Council comments.
Well, the last two Wiggy meetings, one was yesterday, they only had two items on their agenda. One's biogreen. And according to Wiggy, their county is going to give biogreen their site plan approval today. Whether they did or not, I don't know. That's what Wiggy said. Yeah. Whatever that means, I don't know. The other thing is they've been talking to a company by the name of Western Water Company, which I have no idea what Western Water Company does, but they're looking at a possible 10-acre piece of the industrial park for some kind of a fabricated and assembly plant. But they never said what they were going to fabricate or assemble, but they're just in very preliminary talk. Did you were there.
Yeah,
did you hear him say what this water company does?
Actually, I came in, I think I came in after that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I didn't catch it.
Stu, did you hear what they said?
They never said.
They never did say, did they? I don't know, maybe they're going to make water, I don't know. But those are the only two things that are happening with the industrial park. Other than making a fancy little sign, which is really neat. Got a little revolving sign with lights, and everybody's name on it. There aren't any names going on it, but then, yeah. That was really nice. And that's it. Thank you.
All
right. Councilor Hedges?
Well, I went to COIC, and as usual, there was a little complaining about ODOT. And Rick, you can explain this. Why did ODOT buy a restaurant in Madras?
Oh, well, they bought one in Redmond, south of Redmond, actually, the brand. But, actually, the others would probably know more about it than me. My guess is, in the couple people I've talked to, it's cheaper for them to do this. I mean, they're not the business buying restaurants. There's a bunch of accesses there, and what it is my guess is they couldn't close that access or something, and so by buying the restaurant at maybe a bank sale, so it was cheap, they're going to go in, do what they need to do, send this access road. There's a little motel as a used rental. Isn't there like a little Kubota thing? Anyway, they're going to do one nice quality left turn lane there and have everyone feed off of that. Then the land that's left back there, they will sell.
Okay.
So they're going to solve their problem. What they said was they solved the problem cheaper than going in and fighting with all of this. And since the brand was for sale cheap, they bought it, and then they can do what they want, sell the balance. That's my theory.
Well, it just seemed funny, like, yeah, we're going into business.
Well, people have been laughing about it.
Okay. All right. They didn't have too much else going except their bus station, which they're having a little trouble with. And instead of making retail areas at the bottom, they're going to use that for their offices and solve that problem. Hopefully they'll get it going eventually. It's difficult. They have lack of money also. And that's what I have done.
Councilor McAfee?
Yes, I attended the COCO last month, but I haven't reported on it. And there was a discussion about the state forecast and what a dire condition the financial budget is. And sometimes that when they are going to have services that are going to be, you know, paid for services that traditionally we have not paid for before, and just generally how the state is going to provide services unlike it's ever had before. It'll probably be, you know, kind of a pay up front type of thing for our city. So that wasn't too good of the news. Then we talked about the LSE conference, and the LSE conference is going to be in Bend next year, and COCO will be the hosting organization. So I volunteered to be the chair of that committee. So the time will probably have some sort of tour, some sort of function in that convention this year.
Very good. Councilor Brenner?
I went to the COAC meeting last week, and I found out that they're going to be pushing us as a city to get rid of all the noxious weeds on all city streets. And they find that the biggest problem with noxious weeds are the sides of the roads between the property and the street. So they're after us to do that. There's about 800 miles of roadway in the county that the ODOT, and between ODOT and the county, that they have to take care of. And it's a pretty big project, costs a lot of money to do. They say spraying is the best way to do it and the cheapest way to do it, but they can't always do that because of the effects, after effects of the spraying. So they want us to use every kind of a thing that we can, from actually having people go out and pull them, to use the graders and grade up the sides of the roads to get rid of the weeds, and whatever we can use to get rid of them. And then they're going to go ahead and work on the county and ODOT roads. It's amazing, because you know, if you've got 400 miles of roadway, you've got 800 miles of area to cover, and that's basically what they're after. They're really out to get rid of these noxious weeds that they feel that it's really detracting from the Central Oregon. But basically that was what the whole meeting was about, is controlling noxious weeds.
So how do they want to make the city responsible?
They want the city not to be, they didn't say that the city was going to be responsible. They asked that the city take it upon themselves to remove the noxious weeds from their streets.
I see.
The curbs and uh-huh. gutters and the center sections of the streets that they have.
Thank you. Well, I have been attending a lot of city-related meetings, and a lot of other councilors have been attending committee meetings and such, and of course the Economic Revitalization Team meeting, several of us were there. They always, as you know, this is a meeting of various government agency representatives just to refresh and renew relationships and, you know, always stay in the loop with what we're doing and us with them and how they can help us and so on. They're always good meetings. And then, of course, the charter hearing last night, I thought that was a good meeting. I think the committees, from what they've heard and what they've been working on, are getting it pretty well narrowed down to what they think is going to pass muster for a charter. So I'm anxious to see the final version get it back to us. And that's all I have. Oh, other than one more thing, come to think of it, which is really doesn't affect us a whole lot, but the DEQ steering committee had their meeting last night, also working on their charter for, and they had, obviously I wasn't there, but my brother's on the committee, and it was just like he sort of figured going in, they have a lot more work on their charter than what they anticipated. So,
what group's that?
The DEQ steering committee on the nitrate issue. And the only reason I keep bringing this up is because as a city, people ask us, and so we should have a little bit of background on it as it's going on. And then, of course, who knows if the Cagle subdivision will ever, well, that's, we make our rules in there, I think. See, now the county still, county and DEQ still prescribe what kind of septic systems go in there. We have no control over that. So, because they're still doing all of our permitting and all that sort of thing. So if we never, or it's still another 10 years before we annex that, we're going to have this issue with the nitrates and such. So we kind of do need to keep on top of what's going on there. So far, nothing's going on because they're still working on their charter, setting up their committee. So.
Yeah. Oh, just so I forgot, I got 40 applicants for our job so far.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
In 2 weeks. And lots of good applicants, and you know, quite a few local from all over, from Dallas, Texas to Utah, wow. Kansas, New Hampshire, Washington, Oregon, California, Portland, of course, Eugene, Bend. Yeah, real interesting.
And Lapine?
Oh, yeah, several from Lapine. And some have come by to see me, and some have been in, and you know, some have dropped. They tend to drop them off. We've had a lot via email, and then some have called. And, but it's been interesting discussions, actually, but 40 and climbing. So, you know, we're going to be open until closed. And, you know, what I plan to do is start going through some of those. I'll get some people after we've kind of narrowed some down. I'm not going to make anyone sit through 40 interviews. So we'll be kind of going through that and narrowing that down and doing it. And I'll make some phone calls to some folks once we narrow that down, and then we'll get some folks together and we'll try to narrow it further. But and there's a couple ways to go on it. So, you know, I'm going to kind of, I got to think it through and look at, all I've done is collected them, really. I haven't done, Patty's made me a list with everyone's name, address, phone number, and email, and an Excel spreadsheet. So I'll be able to track them and keep track of folks.
But, is that for a part-time position?
Well, we put it out as full-time.
Oh.
You know, but it's not out of the question, Barb, that it could be maybe part-time. Mm-hmm. Now, for some applicants, that works and some it doesn't. So that's all kind of part of the, but he's a good pool of applicants. I was pretty impressed, really.
I'd sure rather have that than, you know, you get two or three and look good.
Yeah.
Well, that's good news. Okay. Wow, I mean, we're done.
Yeah.
And before 8 o'clock.
All right. See everyone next Tuesday.
Meeting is adjourned at 7:55 p.m.